A sloth, a donkey, and a curious human. Send a prompt and see what they're doing. One hits a record with a question on his mind. Two brothers pick it up, see what they find. Corn takes his time, Herman's got the facts. Back and forth, they never hold back. My weird prompts, come on in, that's where we begin. My weird prompts, glad you're here.
This episode was generated using artificial intelligence. Please verify facts.
Daniel sent us this one. He's on fiber in Israel, finally escaped the DSL Dark Ages, and he's noticing something weird. He's got a 1 gigabit connection, maybe 2.5, maybe even 5 gigabits down. And yet the upload on all of these plans, 250 megabits. Maybe as low as 100 if you read the fine print. His question is basically, why? Is this a technical limitation, a business upsell strategy, or just a corner ISP's cut because most people don't notice?
The answer is yes, but not in the way most people assume.
That's the part that got me. You'd think fiber is fiber. Light moves at the same speed both directions. And yet here we are, 2026, and the average residential fiber plan in Israel is about as symmetric as a seesaw with an elephant on one end.
Here's the thing that should immediately tell you this isn't an accident. Bezeek sells a 5,000 megabit download plan. 250. They could make it symmetric. The hardware in the ground supports it. They choose not to.
Daniel's instinct that this might be an upsell play for business plans. He's now being paranoid.
He's being observant. The same company that sells you 5,000 down and 250 up for about 149 shekels a month will happily sell you 1,000 symmetric for 399 shekels. That's nearly triple the price for less total bandwidth. The only thing you're buying is the upload.
Which means the bottleneck isn't the glass in the ground. It's the pricing sheet.
And that's what we're going to unpack. The technical architecture that makes this possible, the business logic that makes it profitable, and what you can actually do about it if you're sitting there watching a YouTube upload crawl at 100 megabits while your download could stream 40 Netflix feeds simultaneously.
Because here's the thing, Daniel's really asking whether he said it directly or not. If the technology can do symmetric, and other countries do symmetric, why is Israel still selling internet like it's 2005 cable?
Let's put numbers on what asymmetric actually means for someone like Daniel. You're backing up a terabyte of footage to the cloud. On a 5 gigabit download plan, your upload is 250 megabits, and the SLA floor can drop to 100. That's not a rounding error. That's a 20-to-1 ratio on a good day, 50-to-1 on a bad one.
It's not like the upload cap scales with the tier. A 1,000 megabit plan gives you 250 up. 2.5 gig, 250 up, still 250. The download gets 5 times faster and the upload doesn't budge.
Which is the tell? If this were a physics problem, if the glass literally couldn't handle symmetric throughput, you'd expect the upload to at least scale proportionally. The fact that it's a flat cap across every residential tier means someone set a knob and walked away.
Walk me through the history here, because Daniel mentioned DSL was the reason he couldn't do cloud backups at all. Was DSL symmetric?
Technically, ADSL, the A stands for asymmetric, was designed that way from the start. 20 megabits down, maybe 2 up if you were lucky, but that was a genuine physics constraint. The copper pair could only carry so much, and the higher frequencies attenuated faster on the upstream. It wasn't a business decision, it was Shannon's law.
Right, so nobody expected DSL to be symmetric. Then fiber arrives and the pitch is, finally, unlimited bandwidth both ways. And yet here we are.
That's the puzzle Daniel's really pointing at. Fiber fixed the bandwidth starvation. You can actually upload a YouTube video now, but it reintroduced asymmetry at a completely different order of magnitude. DSL gave you 20 down and 2 up. Fiber gives you 5,000 down and 250 up. The absolute upload is 100 times better, but the ratio is actually worse.
Which brings us to the three explanations sitting on the table. Option 1, the PON architecture physically can't do symmetric at scale. Option 2, it can, but the cost of making it symmetric, the optics, the backhaul, the peering, eats into margins. Option 3, they can do it. It's not even that expensive. But keeping upload scarce lets them sell business plans at triple the price.
The uncomfortable truth, which we're going to get into, is that it's mostly option 3, with enough of option 2 to give the ISPs a plausible technical alibi. Let's pop open the PON splitter and look at what's actually happening inside that fiber. PON stands for Passive Optical Network. The passive part matters. It means there's no powered equipment between the ISP's central office and your home. Just glass and a splitter.
A splitter being literally a prism that divides one beam of light into 64 beams.
The ISP has a device called an OLT, optical line terminal, sitting in a data center somewhere. That OLT shoots a laser down a single fiber. Somewhere in your neighborhood, that fiber hits a passive splitter, which fans it out to up to 64 homes. Each home gets an ONT, optical network terminal, the little box on your wall. And here's the key. All 64 homes share the same upstream wavelength.
Share as in only one can talk at a time?
More precisely, the OLT allocates time slots. It says ONT number 1, you get to transmit for the next 2 microseconds. ONT number 2, you're up. It's a round robin, and if you're ONT number 64, you wait your turn. That's fine when most people are just sending TCP acknowledgments and the occasional WhatsApp message. It's a disaster if 4 people on your splitter are all trying to upload 4K video simultaneously.
The upstream is a shared party line, and the downstream is...
The downstream is shared too, but differently. The OLT broadcasts everything to everyone. Each ONT just decrypts the packets addressed to it. And the downstream wavelength on GPON runs at 2.488 gigabits per second. 1.244. The standard itself was built asymmetric.
That's the ITU-TG.984 spec, right?
That's the one. GPON was ratified in 2003, and it baked asymmetry into the physical layer. 2.488 down, 1.244 up, shared across 32 or 64 subscribers. Do the math on 64 homes sharing 1.244 gigabits. That's about 19 megabits per home if everyone's uploading equally. Nobody designs for equal usage, so ISPs oversubscribe at ratios of 50 to 1 or higher.
Which is how you get from a theoretical 1.244 gigabit shared pipe to an SLA floor of 100 megabits per subscriber.
That's on GPON. Now, XGS-PON, the 10 gigabit standard, G.9807.1, is symmetric by design. 10 gig down, 10 gig up. The wavelength plan is different, 1577 nanometers down, 1270 up. But here's where the alibi comes in. Even though the standard supports 10 gig symmetric, ISPs configure it asymmetrically because they're still splitting that OLT port across 64 homes.
The fiber itself can do 10 gig both ways. But the moment you hang 64 houses off one port, symmetric 10 gig to every home is mathematically impossible.
If just 4 subscribers on that splitter tried to upload at 1 gigabit each, you'd saturate 4 gigabits of the 10 gig upstream. Push it to 10 users at 1 gig, and you're at the ceiling. Now imagine all 64 trying to upload at anything close to their planned speed. The OLT's upstream port would melt, figuratively speaking. So the ISP caps everyone at 250 to keep the contention math from blowing up.
That's the technical alibi you mentioned. They can point at the splitter ratio and say, look, we physically can't give everyone symmetric 10 gig. Which is true. What they don't say is they could lower the split ratio.
They could run 32 homes per port instead of 64. They could run 16. Every time you halve the split ratio, you double the available bandwidth per subscriber. But that means running more fiber, installing more OLT ports, and spending more on the central office infrastructure. A 64-way split is cheap. A 16-way split costs 4 times as much per home passed.
The ONT on your wall. That's another cost lever. A symmetric XGS PON-ONT needs a burst mode laser transmitter capable of 10 gigabit upstream, plus bigger buffers to handle the time slot scheduling. An asymmetric ONT that only does 2.5 gig up can use cheaper optics.
The bill of materials difference is probably single-digit dollars at manufacturing scale, but multiply that across a few million subscribers and it's real money. Plus, there's the backhaul. The ISP has to buy upstream transit from peering partners and Tier 1 providers. Historically, residential traffic has been about 90% downstream. Netflix, YouTube, web browsing. So ISPs built their transit contracts around that ratio. Buying symmetric backhaul capacity means paying for upstream bandwidth that sits idle most of the time.
Which is a genuine cost, but also a self-fulfilling prophecy. If you cap everyone's upload, of course upstream usage stays low.
And that's where we cross from technical constraint into business strategy, which is where this gets interesting.
Let's follow the money. Bezeek's residential 5 gig plan, 5,000 down, 250 up, is 149 shekels a month. Their symmetric business plan, 1 gig both ways, is 399 shekels. You're paying nearly triple for 1/5, the total bandwidth. The only thing you're buying is the upload.
That's not a bug. That's the product segmentation working exactly as designed. The residential tier is priced for Netflix and WhatsApp. The business tier is priced for the moment you realize Netflix and WhatsApp isn't enough. When you're trying to push a 100 GB Premiere project to the cloud, and the progress bar says 8 hours remaining.
Daniel mentioned cloud backup specifically. He said DSL made them impossible, but even on fiber, a full terabyte backup at 250 megabits takes about 9 hours. At 100 megabits, the SLA floor, it's over 22 hours. That's not backup overnight. That's hope nothing crashes for a full day.
This is where the upsell psychology gets subtle. The 5 gig plan is the prestige tier. It's the one the ISP advertises, the one that makes you feel like you've got the fastest thing available. But the upload cap means it's actually worse value for anyone who does real work. You're paying for a download speed you'll never saturate, while the upload bottleneck makes certain tasks functionally impossible.
Which nudges you toward the business plan. Not because you need a static IP or an SLA with a 4-hour repair window. You probably don't. But because it's the only way to get upload speeds that make cloud workflows viable.
The ISPs know this. The business plan isn't really for businesses. It's for the power user who's hit the residential upload ceiling and is willing to pay triple to remove it. The static IP and the SLA are just window dressing. They justify the price gap so it doesn't look like you're paying 399 shekels purely for upload speed.
Even though you are.
Even though you are. It's the same play airlines use with premium economy. The seat isn't that much better, but the legroom on regular economy is deliberately bad enough to make you consider it.
Is this a scam? I don't think it rises to that. It's not fraudulent. The speeds are disclosed. But it's definitely what you'd call manufactured pain. The asymmetry is a choice, and the pain it causes is the sales funnel.
The knock-on effect ripple out in ways most people don't think about. Take remote work. A VPN adds encryption overhead, figure 10 to 15% throughput loss. A video call in HD is about 3 to 5 megabits. A smart home camera uploading continuously is another 2 to 5. Cloud sync for a family of 4 with phones backing up photos? That's bursty but can spike. Suddenly your 250 up doesn't look like 250 anymore. It looks like a contended, oversubscribed pipe that's being nibbled at from a dozen directions.
If you're a small business, say a video editor or a photographer, you're not going to run your client delivery on a residential plan with a 100 megabit SLA floor. So you get pushed into the business tier, paying $110 a month for something that costs $40 in Tokyo.
Let's talk about Tokyo because the comparison is instructive. NTT's 10 gig symmetric plan, not 1 gig, 10 gig both ways, costs about 5,800 yen a month. That's roughly $38. For symmetric 10 gig,
$38. Meanwhile, Bezeek's 5,000 down, 250 up is about $41. Same price, 50 times less upload.
It's not just Japan. South Korea, Singapore, parts of Scandinavia. Symmetric gigabit or multi-gigabit residential fiber is unremarkable. So what's different? Part of it is density. Tokyo's population density means an OLT port might serve an apartment building with hundreds of units and a few hundred meters of fiber. Israel's suburban sprawl means longer fiber runs and fewer subscribers per splitter, which changes the economics.
Density alone doesn't explain a 50-to-1 upload gap. There's a regulatory story here, too.
Japan's government effectively mandated fiber unbundling in the early 2000s. NTT had to open its infrastructure to competitors at regulated rates. That created price competition on speed, not just on marketing. Israel's wholesale mandate only arrived in 2024, and it's still bottlenecked by Bezeek's OLT configuration. Partner and Cellcom can resell Bezeek's fiber, but they can't change how the splitter is provisioned. If Beza configures the OLT port for asymmetric service, the resellers are stuck with it.
The wholesale mandate gave competitors access to the glass, but not to the configuration knobs that actually determine what the service looks like.
It's like being allowed to sell tickets on a train, but having no say over how many cars are attached. The Ministry of Communications opened the door, but they didn't mandate symmetric provisioning, so nobody offers it on residential plans, because the incumbent has no incentive to, and the competitors can't.
Bezig's monopoly hangover is real. For decades, they were the only game in town for wide infrastructure. That history shapes how they think about product tiers. Protect the high-margin business segment, keep residential asymmetric, and let the wholesale resellers fight over the low end.
The original ARPANET protocols assumed peers could send and receive equally. The asymmetry we've normalized is entirely a commercial artifact of the broadband era. First with cable, then DSL, and now it's been carried forward into fiber even though the physical medium no longer demands it.
What would actually force Israeli ISPs to offer symmetric residential fiber? Genuine infrastructure competition. If someone, say a new entrant or a municipality, started offering symmetric 10 gig for 50 shekels more than Bezik's asymmetric plan, the whole segmentation strategy collapses overnight.
That's not hypothetical. It's happened in other markets. But in Israel, the barrier to entry for new fiber infrastructure is enormous. Digging up streets, negotiating access to buildings, the whole permitting stack. So we're likely stuck with the current dynamic until either the regulator mandates symmetric provisioning on wholesale access, or a competitor finds a way to differentiate that isn't just price.
Which brings us back to Daniel's original instinct. He asked if this is an upsell strategy for symmetric connectivity. The answer is yes. But it's an upsell strategy that works because the technical architecture gives it a plausible alibi. The regulatory framework doesn't prevent it, and the market hasn't produced a competitor willing to break the model. What can someone like Daniel actually do about this today, short of paying triple for a business plan?
A few things, and they range from call your ISP and complain to get creative with hardware. Let's start with the easiest one. If you're on XGS-PON, and most Israeli fiber deployments since about 2023 are, call your ISP and ask to be moved to a less congested splitter. The OLT port you're on might have 63 other homes hammering the upstream. Another port might have 12. The ISP can reprovision you remotely.
They'll actually do that if you ask.
If you complain enough and use the right words. Say contention ratio, an SLA floor, and upstream saturation. Sound like someone who might file a complaint with the Ministry of Communications. The squeaky wheel gets the less congested splitter. It won't get you symmetric, but it might get you closer to that 250 ceiling instead of the 100 megabit floor.
That's the soft power approach. What about the hardware hack?
Bonding two connections. If you've got two separate fiber drops, or one fiber and a cable connection, you can use a load balancing router that supports WAN bonding. Something like a Ubiquiti Edge router or a MikroTik. Two asymmetric connections, each giving you 250 up, can be bonded into a single logical pipe with close to 500 megabits of upstream capacity.
That costs what? Another 149 shekels for the second line.
So you're paying about 300 shekels total for two asymmetric lines with bonded 500 up versus 399 for the business plan with 1,000 up. It's not perfectly equivalent, but if your upload needs are bursty, big file pushes a few times a day, it's a meaningful middle ground.
For cloud backup specifically, Daniel's use case, there's a software angle too.
Most backup tools default to full file sync. They look at a changed file and re-upload the whole thing. Tools like Arc or Duplicata use block-level incremental backup. They only upload the chunks that actually changed. Edit a 1 GB video file and tweak 2 seconds of it? You're uploading maybe 50 megabytes instead of the whole thing. On a constrained upstream, that's the difference between a backup that finishes in minutes and one that runs all night.
You're not fixing the asymmetry. You're making the asymmetry matter less.
And that's the pragmatic playbook. But the bigger move, and this is where I think Daniel's question points, is demand-side pressure. Call your ISP and tell them you want symmetric residential fiber. Email the Ministry of Communications. The technology exists. XGS-PON can do 10 gig symmetric. 25 gig PON is coming in the next year or two, and it's symmetric by design. The only thing keeping upload capped at 250 is a business model that treats upload as a premium feature.
That model only survives as long as customers accept it.
The internet wasn't designed as a broadcast medium. It was designed for peers. Every time you accept a 50-to-1 download to upload ratio, you're not getting a technical limitation. You're getting a pricing strategy dressed up in wavelength specs and splitter math.
The glass can do it. The question is whether we demand it.
That's the thing I keep coming back to. 25 gig PON is right around the corner. The G.9804 spec is finalized, commercial deployment expected in the next year or two. It's symmetric by design. 25 gig down, 25 gig up per wavelength. The physics is screaming at us that symmetry is the future.
You're not optimistic.
I'm not sure the business model hears the physics. What stops them from selling 25 gig down and 2.5 gig up, calling it residential premium, and keeping symmetric 25 gig at a business tier that costs four times as much? The knob doesn't disappear just because the pipe gets bigger. It just moves.
Right. The same playbook, new numbers. The ratio might even get worse. A 10-to-1 asymmetry on a 25 gig pipe still leaves you with 2.5 up, and the ISP can point at the splitter math and say, 64 homes, do the division. The alibi scales perfectly.
That's the open question. Does the sheer abundance of 25 gig finally make the segmentation absurd? Like, at some point, the upload is so fast, even the capped version is more than anyone needs. Or does the segmentation just get rebranded with bigger numbers and the same pain points?
I suspect the latter, unless the market forces a change. Which brings us back to something you said earlier. The internet was built as a peer-to-peer network. Every node could talk to every other node as an equal. The asymmetry we've normalized. This whole idea that you're mostly a consumer of content, not a producer, that's not a law of nature. It's a story the broadband industry told us, and then built infrastructure to make true.
It's a story that made sense in 2005, when the average person was browsing web pages and watching the occasional video. It makes no sense in a world where people are live streaming, backing up terabytes to the cloud, running home servers, and working remotely over VPN. The usage patterns have shifted. The pricing hasn't.
Daniel's question, is this an upsell strategy? Lands on a yes, but with an asterisk. The asterisk being that the upsell only works because the technical architecture and the regulatory landscape and the market structure all happen to align in its favor. Change any one of those, and the whole thing gets harder to sustain.
If this episode made you look at your internet bill and wonder what exactly you're paying for, maybe send it to a friend who's still on DSL and hasn't thought about upload speed since 2012.
That friend needs to know what they're missing, and also what they're being denied.
Hilbert's Daily Fun Fact.
A single surviving clay tablet from Copan, Honduras, dated to roughly 400 CE, contains a Mayan scribe's tally of tribute goods using a bar and dot numeral system where a shell-shaped glyph represented 01, one of the earliest known written zeros in the Americas, predating its use in the Old World by centuries.
A shell for zero. That's actually kind of beautiful.
It really is.
This has been my Weird Prompts. If you want more episodes that make you side-eye your utility bills, we're at myweirdprompts.com. Email the show at show@myweirdprompts.com. We'll be back soon.
Until then, check your upload speed.
This episode's script was written by DeepSeek V4 Pro, with text-to-speech by Chatterbox.
Thanks for listening to our show, My Weird Prompts, where odd thoughts go. From sloth's slow takes to facts on cue, we chase the strange and follow through. Some nights it's news, some nights it's lore, a thought you've never heard before. The host dig in, the host dig deep. The stranger the prompt, the less they sleep. From tiny questions, big ones too. From half-formed hunches to deja vu. If something odd is in your head, send it in, we'll chase the thread. My weird prompts, that's the close. From sloth, from man, from long-eared host. My weird prompts, until next time. Stay curious, keep weird in mind.